Welcome to the Life After Cubes Travel and Entrepreneurship Podcast. This is Jason DeMont, and today I'm joined by Jim Hornthal. Jim was the founder of Preview Travel, one of the first online travel booking companies. After going public in 1997, Preview merged with Travelocity in 2000. At the time, this merger created the third largest site on the internet, only behind Amazon and eBay. Travelocity was ultimately reacquired in 2002 by Sabre Holdings. Today, Jim works on both sides of the table. He's a partner at the venture capital firm SMEA Capital, and he's also the founder of Tripperati.com. Tripperati is helping people discover what travel destinations to go to based on their interests. It's been called the Vacation Genome Project. Jim is also an active angel investor with investments in HipBunk, Via.com, Bleco, among many others. Finally, Jim is also involved with a few philanthropic causes, trying to make the world a smaller place by bridging the widening gaps between conflicting regions and nations. Thanks very much for taking the time to join me, Jim.
It's a pleasure to be here, Jason.
First question, how did I do with my introduction?
Wow. I think it was mostly okay. CMEA is the venture firm.
CMEA, oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. And so that's one little typo, but not a big deal.
Cool.
And for the rest of it, at least some of it must be true. I don't know.
Yeah, I was when I started doing some research into you, I got a little concerned how I'm going to cover so many different things in 20 to 30 minutes. So next question. Yep. Do you sleep?
There was a great button that we printed up for a conference in the early days of Preview that we handed out, and it said, sleep is for sissies. The answer is, yeah, I think there's an article in the Wall Street Journal last week. I don't need that much sleep, but I'd like more. And I think that the sleeping is a good thing. I'm all for sleep.
Great. So I've contacted a number of people about doing interviews, and you were the very first person to shoot me a follow-up email after we failed to connect. You're obviously a very busy guy. I'm curious, why did you do that?
Well, part of it's guilt. and I think part of it is also the love of the entrepreneurial spirit. I'm a entrepreneur addict. I feel like if there was an EA, Entrepreneurs Anonymous, I would go and I would confess my sins every week. But I think you're trying to do something new and innovative, and it's great when the ecosystem can support innovation and creativity.
Great. Yes. Thank you. And I definitely appreciate it. I was caught off guard when you sent me the follow-up email, but that was great. So what I'd like to focus on for this interview is both Preview Travel and Tripperati. And talk about how they got started and off the ground, and then we'll wrap up by talking about what kind of advice you have for other entrepreneurs interested in the travel space.
Okay.
Great. So let's start with Preview Travel. When did you start Preview?
That's funny. The company actually began in 1985, and when we were preparing our filing to go public in 1997, the underwriters were convinced that we must have had a typo, that we must have really started in 1995. And we assured them, no, we spent 10 years wandering aimlessly in the desert. But we actually began life doing the same kinds of things, which is giving consumers the information and resources that they would need to plan and book travel. But we were doing it on different platforms. In the mid-80s, the new emerging media were things that we take for granted and have already been, frankly, overtaken. VCR penetration was 20% and growing, and cable TV penetration was less than 20% and growing. And we began as a company that was going to create and distribute content for travel for those emerging platforms. And we did a number of things in the syndicated news programming, weekly half-hour shows. We had a daily half-hour show on the Discovery Channel. At the peak, we were in 110 countries around the world and over 100 cities in the U.S., creating television programming on leisure travel. And at its peak, we built a library of 5,000 hours of broadcast quality video on over 2,000 destinations around the world. And as the world evolved, we began trying to sell travel on TV and found that the spikes of demand for an infomercial overwhelmed any call center we could ever staff. But one of our early board members and investors, Ted Leonsis, had sold his company to America Online in 94. And that was a company at the time that had 800,000 subscribers. It was number three behind Prodigy and CompuServe. Mm-hmm. And we looked at AOL as kind of a television station that didn't have a huge audience, which was good, because we could manage the demand much more linearly. And we had to take our video and pull little frames, little pictures. We had a billion frames of information and pick the ones that were the most provocative and most illustrative of these destinations, and over a low bandwidth, dumb down the images so they could go through the narrow pipes mm-hmm. and paint the story of what these places offered and meant, and began with asynchronous email communication with people that wanted to book travel. We used that as an excuse to build a booking engine, and then we held on for dear life as AOL carpet bombed America with free discs and went from $2.95 an hour, where we would actually get revenue on connect time, to unlimited, where we'd actually have to pay AOL for the privilege of connecting to their members. So business models were in flux. We were, to use the words of 2011, we were iterating and pivoting like crazy, but didn't have vocabulary to describe what we were doing.
Wow, that's an incredible story.
Many near-death experiences.
So what did you, I mean, it sounds like you had pretty good traction in the TV market. Did you kind of drop that and just pursue the AOL, you know, area?
So, yeah, in 1991, ancient history for most, a law was passed in the United States. Prior to that, the longest a commercial could run on television was 2 minutes. 1991, they allowed what they called program-length commercials, what we now call infomercials.
Right.
And one of our biggest television partners back then was NBC. And they owned stations in New York, L.A., Chicago, Miami, Denver. And we were talking to them about, what are you going to do with this new freedom on weekends when you've got, you know, football and basketball and baseball, but you have these half hour and hour slots? And they were very fearful of selling the time to programs that would make the audience potentially go away. Mm. And then when they were over, where's the audience for the shows that they needed them to be there for, to sell advertising to? And they all were running our show that we had back then called Weekend Travel Update, which was a summary of the news, information, resources of travel in a news magazine format. And we came up with an idea to experiment with them on a show we call Preview Vacation Bargains. And we would do four destination profiles, each with a specific offer, but digital editing was just coming into play. We would have a different price in a package. You know, everyone might have London, but we'd price it out of Washington or New York or Chicago. There'd be a weekend getaway that would be relevant to the place we were talking about. And we had literally a different show in every city, but some commonality in editorial.
Right, yeah.
And that way they could keep the audience. The ratings were strong. The demographics were great. It was counter-programming to sports. And together we learned how we could monetize their time. They contribute the time, we contribute the production, and we'd share in the transaction. So they got us into the idea of using media to sell travel, not just to inform. And then the problem was, literally when the show was on and the 800 number would come on, we just didn't have enough operators to handle the spike. But when the show was off, no one would call because no one knew the number to call. So these huge spikes in demand proved over 18 months of experimentation to be just unmanageable. It would either be a desert or a tsunami, followed by a desert, followed by a tsunami. And all we wanted was a consistent flow of water.
Yeah.
And with AOL, we had that opportunity to really program into a much more manageable audience and then build technology that would scale, unlike call centers, which don't particularly scale very well. And so that's how we kind of pivoted at that time.
Yeah, makes sense. How many co-founders and what were their roles at the beginning of the company, I guess?
The very beginning, I think I was the only guy on the life raft looking for wind. And at different phases, there were more different critical people that were, you know, near founders or certainly critical to our success. when we were in the television production business, we had a team from TV that knew that industry better than I ever would. As we started to get into online travel, we had to bring in experts in engineering and distribution and marketing.
Yeah.
And so depending on what phase, Harvard Business School wrote a case study on preview travel.
Oh.
And it's kind of like reliving your nightmare. every time the course is taught, I go into Stanford or Berkeley or Harvard when they teach it, and I feel like the pinata at the end of the class is everyone's beating it with a stick for all of the sometimes foolish and sometimes very innovative mistakes that we were able to make at the time.
Yeah. Do you know if that's available online, the Harvard case?
Harvard doesn't give away anything. They sell the case, and it's through HBR reprints.
Darn. Okay.
But it's a very painful it's a very painful book.
It's
well written and it's nicely done, but it's not something that is in the public domain.
Oh, gotcha. And what was then your inspiration for your original idea?
Well, I think going back in time, ancient history, my first job after business school was working with the Boston Consulting Group, and my main client was United Airlines. And at the time, the U.S. airline industry was just becoming deregulated, mm-hmm. and I had the privilege of learning from a lot of smart people about route planning, pricing, and distribution in a deregulated era. And I was fascinated by the industry, the size, the dynamics, the economics, the distribution channels. And I was equally in love with media. I ran the college radio station and had a lot of interest in motion picture production, distribution, and so on, and was contemplating the emerging platforms of cable and home video and was looking at ways to program into those platforms. The problem with travel production, if you can imagine, with broadcast standards being, you know, expensive equipment back then and difficult, is it's really costly. And you know, I ran some analysis of what would it take to program original travel for those markets, and it was really stupid. You know, everyone with a VCR would have to buy 5 copies of every tape to break even or something equally stupid. And forgot about it until I ran into a producer of a documentary in San Francisco, and we were having a glass of wine, and he mentioned that he just finished this documentary where the Pope was coming to the U.S., and he was producing it, and in order to finish the documentary, he had to go and purchase 5 seconds of the Vatican. And that was a phrase I'd never heard before. And I said, I don't understand. You call the Pope, you download over modem, and what do you mean you bought 5 seconds of the Vatican? And he said, well, there's a company in Sacramento called News Travel Network, and they had production crews all over the world, and they were doing this for local television news, and they'd been to the Vatican, and they had footage of the Pope doing that little Pope wave thing that the Pope does. And he paid them a modest fee to repurpose that content for his documentary.
Yeah.
And the law of least regret requires a phone call. Sacramento is only 90 miles from San Francisco. Called them on Monday, met them on Tuesday, and found 5 incredibly talented television people with a closet full of really wonderful videotape. And all they wanted to do was provide it to broadcast affiliates around the U.S. And so I pulled out that old business model and erased field production. And it became a pretty interesting deal to license the non-broadcast rights to that asset, to try and do what I thought made sense. And then a year later wound up acquiring the parent company and had to help them navigate some challenges in their own distribution strategy. And through that, strengthen the broadcast properties, the distribution channels, domestically, internationally. We did in-flight programming for Northwest Airlines as well, and built this huge content asset through the video.
Wow.
And it reinforced the belief that people really needed help to know where to go. You know, it's a question that was as true then as it is now, and really was the unanswered question for Tripperati, because even back in the early 90s, 70% of people don't know where they're going to go on vacation 3 to 4 months before they actually book. I was lucky with the News Travel Network producers, as I could sit down in a room with them and ask them where I should go. And they would ask me, well, who's going? Are you going with your wife? Are you going with your kids? What do you like to do? And then they would go back into the video vault and bring me 3 or 4 tapes and said, you're going to love any of these places. And so when the industry, we as one of the players in the industry, we call it, you know, Web 1.0, Travel 1.0, what we really did was we took the travel agent's screen and we turned it around to the consumer and cleaned it up. In the process, though, the collateral damage is we put out of business many, many, many thousands of talented travel agents that had really relevant, useful experience to share. Mm-hmm. And what Tripperati is doing is reanimating some of that expertise in the form of an expert recommendation engine. And, you know, we have done for destinations, it's actually the Destination Genome Project, what Pandora has done for music. You know, they have musicologists, they've rated 800,000 songs, they break the songs down into 400 elements. The elements are individually scored on a taxonomy or a vocabulary that we usually don't have. You know, if I ask you, why do you like that song? You're probably not going to tell me because it's in 4/4 meter in B flat minor with certain types of vocal harmonies. You're going to say, I just like that song. Well, in travel, we've got 62 attributes that define vacations, and our 77 experts have written over 650 guidebooks. So they've written Frommer's and Fodor's Lonely Planet Rough Guide books. They have similarly ranked and rated these 62 attributes along 2,100 destinations around the world. So when you share with us your interest graph, what it is you like, and the priorities and importance of that, our algorithm will actually generate an expert-based recommendation engine of places we think you might want to consider and explore and know more of. So right. We're really putting online some of the luxury and privilege I had of these great producers and their decades of experience, but we're putting it in a way that it's democratizing access to that knowledge base.
Gotcha. And I do want to spend some time on Tripperati. Just a couple more questions on preview, and then we'll move on to Tripperati. So you had mentioned did you purchase the company in Sacramento?
It was a complicated transaction, but we wound up hiring all the people and taking over all the assets as well.
Did you do that with investors? How did you go about with that process?
Yes. Yeah. No, we were constantly, my wife described that period of time as we were always between financings. you know, as soon as we closed a round, we'd always be looking for the next round. And fortunately, we had a group of very patient investors who were willing to pivot with us and did not view our evolving business models as a liability. And it's sort of that trade-off with an entrepreneur between focus and peripheral vision. You know, absolutely no focus can be horrible, but too much focus can be just as bad. And we found a healthy balance between what we thought we needed to do and what the market was telling us we had to do. And so they were very supportive all the way, and fortunately were handsomely rewarded for their patience.
Great. I know you eventually went public. Can you tell me a little bit about that experience? And, you know, I guess it was 12 years of work and finally getting to get to that point. What was that experience like?
Yeah, our early investors joked that they had to carbon date their stock certificate. They had it was a great celebration of an incredibly talented team that was able to navigate the waters, because 97 was not a great time to go public. It was really a challenging time in the market. In fact, no one did well in the fourth quarter. The good news is we started the year down from our public offering price, but we ended the first quarter of 98 as the number one performing stock on the NASDAQ.
Wow.
And that allowed us to do a secondary offering in April, which provided great liquidity for some of our investors, as well as putting more money in the bank for the company. So we had a great team and in finance and marketing and sales and distribution and engineering. You know, my goal in building a team has and always has been to try and be the dumbest person in the room and find people better than you at everything possible, because they're out there. You just are too lazy to find them. So this was a case where the success was completely attributed to having really a great group of professionals, many of whom are back in the Tripperati team. You know, we joke that Tripperati is actually the Preview Travel Reunion Tour. Our CEO, Chris McAndrews, joined before our IPO at Preview. Our engineering team, Pat Middleton, Patrick McKeever, our chief product officer, Charlene Wong, all are veterans and former teammates at Preview Travel. And so now they're doing it again.
Well, that's great. So perfect segue. I know there's plenty more to talk about preview, but I do want to get to Tripurati.
Oh, no. I think we've exhausted that.
when did you found Tripurati?
So the group came together as a concept and more of a sort of a cocktail party conversation. Late 06 and early 07, we started just whiteboarding what this might be. And we spent about 9 months casually but thoughtfully thinking about the ontology, how the data would need to be organized, and the taxonomy, what would you call these attributes and interests. And we prototyped a few things because we weren't sure that this was worth doing. You know, the one thing is, and I just had a meeting today with some talented entrepreneurs from another country, you know, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. And would this be the highest and best use of our time and our talent, not just money? So we had to convince ourselves. And once we became convinced that there was a real purpose here and it had great value to consumers as well as partners, and we sort of socialized it with some potential distribution partners, then I made the financial commitment to really put some more resources behind it and build an engineering product at an alpha and a beta version so we could take it in the marketplace and see if it was as good as we thought it could be.
This is great. So can you tell me more about how you went through your vetting process with this initial idea?
We kept trying to find people we respected who would be honest with us, that would tell us why this was the dumbest thing they ever heard. And we would begin positioning it pretty much that way, because it's not about salesmanship at that point. It's really about trying to figure out if this is going to be, again, a good return on the effort, not on the capital. And we're very skeptical. You know, we went in there saying, you know, someone else must be doing something like this. Why aren't they? Maybe it's because it's the elusive $0 billion market that no one cares about. You know, just because someone isn't doing it doesn't mean you should. Maybe it's because maybe it shouldn't be done. Yeah. And so we went in very skeptically. We saw people trying to do this with, you know, the wisdom of crowds. We saw people trying to do this with semantic search. Mm-hmm. And in certain areas where we think the time and or the money at risk is material, those are poor excuses for experts. And if you're looking for expert wisdom in certain decisions you're going to make, we think in health and finance and we think in travel, there's a strong role for the expert defining alternatives and options, for friends to be your validation engine, and for crowds sort of at the very end to be a collaboration tool and or a corroboration tool, really.
Right. So when you say you were going in and talking with people, are you talking with friends and families?
Friends and families will never be honest with you. We went to talk to the hostile elements in the industry, people that we'd known, that we respected, and we went in saying, you know, I really don't want to sell you. I want to ask you what you think. Is this something that, you know, is fulfilling a need from a supplier view, from a distribution channel view, from a customer view? And we continue to ask those questions today. Yeah. You know, I think that the way Preview started, the website needed to and constantly did evolve and look very different than it started, and that's appropriate. And I think the same is true for any successful venture, including Tripurati. We're constantly challenging the user interface, the distribution channels, the brand proposition, and so on, until forever. You know, it'll keep evolving.
How many people do you think you spoke with about the idea before you said, let's do it?
Dozens and dozens. And they weren't just people on the street. They were people, you know, in the industry that had a reference point on which we could weigh their opinion heavily.
That's great. So you mentioned your unbelievable team of travel experts, and I looked at the page, and it's a pretty impressive list. How did you go about recruiting 77 of these amazing travel experts?
By recruiting a world-class editor-in-chief whose life has been spent in that space, who knew many of these people and could network within their network to find the people to fill in the geographic holes that we would need to fill in.
Gotcha. And I don't know if you feel comfortable talking about this. How are you compensating the travel experts?
We pay them for their professional time and effort. We pay them to both learn our system as well as input data into the system. And we pay them, real money via PayPal. I've only met maybe a handful of the 77. Mm-hmm. For those who are really thinking about themselves as a brand and are tweeting and are blogging, that's great because we can drive traffic back to their other platforms for monetization. But, travel writers deserve to be paid for their time. So it's not free contribution and hope for a back end. It's, fair compensation for the effort and work they put in, which is significant.
Yeah, that's great. So switching to the other side, how did you find your first 100 customers for Tripperati?
Well, so our distribution strategy is with partners. And as a partner, we're working with a number of the AAA clubs, the American Automobile Association. And I think that the number of clubs we're working with now under contract serve over 10 million members. Much like AOL was the way you found Preview.
Yes.
And frankly, early on with Travelocity, you found Travelocity through Yahoo. Mm-hmm. We think that, when you stand on the shoulders of giants, that's a good thing because the view is much better up there. So we like that playbook. It's not the only playbook to execute, but we think it's got a lot of leverage for us and our partners to learn with and from each other. So we don't have 100 partners, but we do have a lot of customers coming from the partners that we do have.
And so what made you go the AAA route? What made you decide to, try them as partners first?
They actually found us.
Wow.
Exactly. They stumbled upon us. I think it actually came through Philip Wolf at Focusrite. We told Philip what we were doing early on because, we respect him a lot. I think Philip and I have been in the industry. We joked that the first booking in online travel that we made was at Kitty Hawk with the Wright brothers. It's a one-way ticket. It didn't go very far. But Philip has been similarly around in travel. We think his first innovation he saw was the wheel, where he suggested they just round the corners and it might go somewhere. And so we ran this by Philip. He's one of the early folks where he said, here's what we're doing. What do you think? This is where we think it can go. And I think Philip was giving a talk to some AAA marketing people and was berating the state of some of their technology and said they needed to do things more innovative. For example, some of the stuff Tripperati is doing, and we were still in like alpha.
Uh-huh.
So we got a couple of calls from these folks saying, how did you find us? And they said, well, Philip Wolf said we should know what you're doing. So we showed some of these early pioneers what we were all about, figuring that these are big organizations. They take a long time to make a decision. We won't live long enough to see them do something. And they surprised us. What they wanted to do and what they saw their members needing matched very well with our approach and our technology and our content and our output, which is personalized recommendations. So it went together much quicker than anyone had thought. We modified our development to be more responsive to their needs, and we kind of hit that fortunate seam of mutual opportunity and needing, mm-hmm. That serendipity moment, if you will.
Yeah.
And Philip and his contacts definitely get a very strong assist on that goal.
Before you were, what was your initial distribution strategy before, it seems like they kind of changed the game for you guys.
Well, we did a little experimentation with SEM and SEO, and mm-hmm. anyone can model what it takes to drive traffic and what the click-throughs will be. And, I'm a strong disbeliever in click arbitrage. I don't think you can build a sustainable business that's going to assume you can buy traffic over time for less than the traffic is worth. That, the efficient markets suggest that people will bid up the value of those clicks to a point where the margin is little to none. But we did some experimentation, drive people to the site, UI testing, where are they bouncing off? Why are they bouncing off? And we were still feeling out the different channels and opportunities and had talked to some very large suppliers about doing a co-branded version that would be a subset of the world that would fit into their distribution or service delivery platforms. and had some traction there. And frankly, we were going to go forth on some of those partnerships till the AAA thing came up, and it was a healthy distraction to get us back to a broader based solution.
Gotcha. So I'll try to wrap up here with just a couple more questions. What was the biggest assumption that you made with Triperati that has turned out to be wrong?
What was the biggest assumption? Wow.
There's so many. I don't think there's one biggest. I think we're still learning where we're a discovery platform. And as a discovery platform, we're building interest graphs of consumers. Mm-hmm. And we're working with partners to monetize that interest graph as they plan and book travel. And there's a lot of forks in that road of other places this asset might take you or might lead you. And so we continue to not use a lot of quick drying cement as we plow our way through the evolution of any business. And are strong believers in that lean startup model of, you know, prototyping, iterating, and getting a lot of customer development and feedback. So I'd say that the biggest assumptions that were wrong are probably the ones we're still making and will continue to make.
Gotcha. Switching gears again, what advice would you give to a new entrepreneur that's interested in the travel space?
Just read that Expedia is spinning off TripAdvisor. That just came through the news feed, by the way.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Expedia stock jumps 14% after announcing it will spin off TripAdvisor. So this just in. The advice is to, it's not can you, it's should you. I mean, there's a lot of, I don't want to say they're grade B, but they're certainly not grade A innovations mm-hmm. that take just as much time. I think that the theme would be good is the enemy of great. And make sure that if you're going to throw your time and effort and career and attention and resources into a project, that at least in your opinion as the innovator and entrepreneur, that you think it can be really great. And I think a lot of time is spent and cycles expended chasing down opportunities that in hindsight maybe shouldn't have made the grade, but the grade might have been compromised early on because the people that made the decisions just wanted to get something done versus getting something great done.
Yeah. That's great advice. And it's
no one ever listens to it, but I keep offering it.
Yeah, it's very fitting with how you started Triperati too, which is a great theme. Last two questions here. What's coming next for Triperati?
Well, we've got some contracts we've signed, but we're not going to announce them until we launch, which will be in a few months, that we think are pretty exciting. And hopefully the partners we're working with will agree. We're actually having some conversations about doing a foreign language and regional version with a partner that's also not yet announced, because we think that it's a universal problem to figure out where to go and how to get there.
Sure.
So we're excited about things that are in the corp dev biz dev realm, but none of which we're comfortable about talking about until they're live and real.
Yep. Understood. And would you, anything other than Triperati, if anything coming next for Jim Hornthal? You seem like a very busy guy.
Oh, there's a couple other startups that I'm having a lot of fun working with the young team, two teams, but one particular that's I'm real excited about what they're doing. But again, if I talk more about it, they'd shoot me. So, but it's not in travel.
Gotcha. No problem. I think that'll do it.
Thanks for listening. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, I'd really love to hear it. You can send me an email at jason@lifeaftercubes.com.